This is Living Lab on the Point. I'm Heather Goldstone. Scientists and journalists don't always see the world through the same lens. Journalists increasingly, though, are drawing on the methodology of scientists. One key example is data journalism, a phrase that basically means journalists doing their own number crunching and reporting on it, rather than asking scientists to tell them what they've found. It's a hot field these days. So to learn more, we turn to Dan Kennedy, assistant professor at Northeastern University's School of Journalism. He's author of the Media Nation blog and a book entitled The Wired City, Reimagining Journalism and Civic Life in the Post-Newspaper Age. Also, Jonathan Stray. He's a computer scientist and professional journalist. He's written for The New York Times, Foreign Policy, and Wired as a freelancer and teaches a course in computational journalism at Columbia University. He's currently leading development of the Overview Project, an open source tool to help journalists organize and analyze large collections of documents. Jonathan Stray, Dan Kennedy, welcome to Living Lab.
Thank you.
Now, Dan Kennedy, is data usage by media companies changing journalism, the way that reporters do their job, or what stories even they're assigned to? Are media companies using big data to target what we do in the journalism world?
Well, I certainly think that it has made some changes to the way we do our job, simply because data are so much more readily available than they were before computers, before the internet. And the amount of information that journalists can access today simply by sitting at their desks is so much greater than it was previously. And with the ability to access that data becomes an expectation that you're going to access that data and use it and make sense of it for our audience.
Now, Jonathan Stray, how are journalists using the wealth of data now available? Can you give us some examples?
Well, a lot of different ways. Sometimes very simple stuff, sometimes much more complicated analyses. So, for example, economic data. The government comes out with things like unemployment figures and GDP and such. Somebody's got to put that on a chart and say what it means and point out, you know, interesting changes or talk about how those numbers are going to affect people's lives. So that's a fairly simple use of data. It's just taking statistics that the government produces and communicating them. But we're also seeing, at the other end, much more complicated analyses. So we're seeing things like we saw crowdsourced radiation maps during the Fukushima meltdown, where Japanese citizens actually built small homemade radiation detectors and went all over the country to produce much more detailed information than anybody else had, including the Japanese government.
Now, Dan Kennedy, this kind of number crunching, going into statistics themselves, do you see this as a fundamental shift in what journalists are doing? Or is this just kind of a modernization of what journalists have been doing all along?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, and I also think that it's important to keep in mind that not all journalists are doing it. There tend to be some specialists in a newsroom who know how to do this. One of the things that we tell our students is that it's not necessary for you to become a computer programmer, although some will, and that's great, but it has become absolutely essential to you to understand what it is that computer programmers can do and how they can help you. Essentially, we need people who understand data to be at the table on any sort of a big project, just as we would expect, you know, designers and copy editors and photographers to be at the table. It becomes yet another tool at our disposal, and all journalists need to understand what the possibilities are, even if they may not have the capability to roll up their sleeves and muck around in the data themselves.
Now, Jonathan Stray, you do actually have a master's degree in computer science as well as one in journalism, so you're presumably one of those trained specialists who is capable of wading in and programming and working with the numbers. Do you think that kind of dual training is necessary at this point?
It's necessary in some cases. So I also teach at Columbia Journalism School, and they now have a new dual master's in computer science and journalism. And, you know, I happen to think this is a very interesting and successful program, but it's not a large program. You know, we have only a handful of students every year. But there's a certain type of person to whom that combination really appeals, to be able to go deep into the story and the ability to not only do the analysis and figure out what's going on, but then to communicate it. And that's a very interesting type of hybrid ability. And a lot of people in the newsroom are starting to have that to some degree.
I mean, there have been stories recently about, you know, an effort to get essentially all high school students learning a computer language. This computer programming side of things is becoming more and more a part of daily life for a broad swath of the population. But there's another aspect to data analysis, which, of course, is understanding the mathematics and the statistics that go into that analysis. And that's a different thing than simply being able to pull something out, making sure that you've done the analysis in the correct way and are actually arriving at a correct answer. I wonder if that's ever a concern when we have journalists wading into these large data sets.
It's absolutely a concern. One of the units in the course that I teach is called Drawing Conclusions from Data, and it's all about the interpretive process. You know, there's this sort of idea that numbers are truth, right? Well, numbers aren't truth. They come from somewhere. Even the, you know, government figures that are normally considered extremely reliable, the GDP isn't, you know, you don't get out a ruler and measurement. It's an enormously complicated calculation, and it's often revised, and that's a reliable figure. So if you're working with something that may be much less meticulously put together, let's say, crime statistics from the local city police department, you have to ask questions like, what are they actually counting? And what does this actually mean? Because if you change the definition of a crime, you can make crime numbers go down.
Now, we've all heard the phrase, you know, lies, damned lies, and statistics, going to this point that depending on how you analyze a data set, you can get a different answer. And I think often these days, even when there's been an analysis, you can always find two different people who look at the numbers in two different ways and say, well, these numbers really mean we should do X. And somebody else says, well, these numbers really mean we should do the exact opposite. Dan Kennedy, when journalists are the ones actually doing the number crunching and drawing the conclusions themselves, is there a risk that instead of being conveyors of truth, that this could actually backfire and damage the credibility of journalists to be seen as the ones, you know, actually playing with the numbers?
Well, you know, it's, yes, there is that risk, but I wanted to expand a little bit on the risk that Jonathan was talking about, which is that I think the larger risk is journalists looking at numbers and not necessarily understanding what they mean. One of the great developments that we're seeing now is a news organization may do a big investigative report based on data, and then they will show their work. They'll essentially publish all of the underlying data. And we saw this a couple of years ago when the Atlanta Journal-Constitution did an enormous project on problems with standardized testing, essentially cheating by teachers and administrators. And it was a remarkable piece of journalism, and they published all of the data they got, which in many parts of the country went down to the school level. And you look at that and you say, gee, this could launch 1,000 follow-ups by local news organizations. But then when you look a little more closely, you see that the numbers for these schools are so tiny in many cases that it's hard to know what they mean. You know, a change in a number of one or two would have completely changed whether this school had been flagged as having a problem or not. So I do think that we really need to be very, very careful about what it is that we're looking at and making sure that we present them in the proper context and don't inadvertently twist them in some way, never mind deliberately twisting them in some way.
I mean, as you said, there are only a few people typically in a newsroom who might have the full suite of skills to do this all by themselves. Is collaboration, whether it's between multiple news organizations or perhaps even between journalists and scientists or economists, something that's becoming more common?
Not as common as it should. Collaborations, I think, are a real key, and you see a number of news organizations working with various types of nonprofit news projects, a lot of them based at colleges and universities. I mean, you see that at Northeastern University, you see it at Boston University. So they are taking advantage of some of that expertise. But it's still something that people need, that journalists need to gain some expertise in themselves. We have a combined major for undergraduates in journalism and computer science, which we are very excited about, and yet at the same time, it's attracted very few journalists. Unfortunately, many people do go into journalism, and I was certainly one of these many years ago, because we don't like math. And now math is becoming an absolute key to what it is that we do. So we really have to reorient our thinking in that regard.
Now, Jonathan Stray, you know, we're talking about the collaboration and the tools that might be necessary, the skills that are necessary. You're actually involved in developing this online open source system called the Overview Project, which is to help journalists organize and analyze large sets of documents. And I don't know that we would necessarily always equate documents as data, but talk a little bit about that project, what the goal is, and what some of the kinds of tools are that you think journalists need to have, the new sorts of tools that journalists need to have.
Well, the number one tool for doing data journalism has been for many years and will be for many more years, I'm sure, a spreadsheet. Right. If you want to get started in data journalism, you can do, I would say, probably 90 or 95% of the stories that are done with a copy of Excel. So, it doesn't have to be complicated in terms of the types of technology that you use. But my work on the Overview Project is to help journalists deal with documents. So if you look at rows and columns of numbers, we call that structured data. There's also unstructured data, which is it's what humans are used to dealing with. It's piles of plain text documents. And although people don't normally think of those as data, if you have, let's say, 5,000 emails that you have obtained from a state government through a Freedom of Information request, somewhere in there is a narrative of what happened. So, of course, this example in New Jersey with the bridge being closed is a famous example, right? There's a lot of documentation. And in that case, there was a small number of documents that were relevant. But if you don't know which documents those are, and say you got an anonymous tip that something was up, you may not even know who sent the email. You may not be able to think of words to search for. How do you approach 5,000, 10,000, or even now journalists are starting to deal with document jumps up into the hundreds of thousands or millions of pages. And so we're trying to use computational techniques to make the computer do some of the reading for you. What the software does is it reads the text of each document and tries to organize them by topic, much as I've seen many times someone with a banker's box full of paper sitting on the newsroom floor sorting the pages into piles before they start going through them.
Now, Dan Kennedy, a couple of years ago, you wrote a piece for Huffington Post on the limits of fact-checking. And in that article, you were actually talking primarily about PolitiFact. But you made an interesting point. As we're talking about journalists going in, doing their own data analysis, trying to be the ones finding the facts and the truth hidden in all of this data, you made the point that not everything in life is about facts. So, and you've already said that even these, programs, hybrid programs in computer science and journalism aren't necessarily attracting the number of students we might think. Amidst all the hype about data journalism and big data, is there still a place for old school traditional journalism going out and just asking the sources what the story is?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that is still what most of journalism is. But let me kind of update that idea with a the notion that the easy accessibility of data and the need to try to make sense out of that has made it less and less defensible to do typical he said, she said journalism, and in which you let, you know, one side tell the truth and the other side lie. I mean, we really need to be basing our journalism in knowledge in order to help our audience understand exactly what's going on. Thomas Patterson of the Shorenstein Center at Harvard's Kennedy School wrote a whole book about this last year, that he said that, you know, typically journalism is consisted of firsthand observation, interviews with people, and he said we really need to add a third piece to the puzzle, and that is knowledge. And data and understanding how to use data really helps us to put that knowledge into perspective. He talks about a situation in the book, and this is something that really would have lent itself to better study of the data, in which, oh, I'd say 20 years ago, there were some very high-profile, horrifying, violent crimes, and it led to draconian laws. It led to calls from the media to pass these draconian laws, and it led to this explosive increase in the incarceration rate, which, as we all know, has become a very important social issue that we're all trying to figure out how to deal with. And what Patterson points out is, if somebody had looked at the data at the time and really explored it, they would have seen that these high-profile crimes were taking place at a time when the overall rate of violent crime and murder were dropping quite a bit. So there was never any need for these laws. And because journalism failed to bring this data-based knowledge to the table, that contributed to an extremely deleterious public policy outcome.
And as you said in your review of that book, a compelling case for knowledge-based journalism. Dan Kennedy is an assistant professor of journalism at Northeastern University, a nationally known media commentator and author of the blog Media Nation. He'll also be moderating a panel discussion about big data and the future of journalism, hosted by Mass Inc. on February 11th. Dan, thank you.
Thank you.
You can find a link to more information about that upcoming event on our website, capeandislands.org. Coming up, computational journalist Jonathan Stray stays with us, and Quartz.com news editor Gideon Litchfield joins us for a conversation about what journalists can borrow from the scientific method. That's after a short break.